Welcome back to another episode of Cohen's Corner. Last time we talked to you, the Mets had yet to complete their fire sale. They had started with trading David Robertson, and we all know what's happened since. So we'll talk about that a little bit, some of the prospects they acquired, how they're doing. We'll go around the league a little bit, see how some of the buyers have done, talk about some of the other sellers from the deadline. But since then, the Mets have kind of been what the Mets have been all year. They've been playing mediocre baseball. They're still somewhat similar in the standings to where they were when they traded everyone away. We know they got spanked by the Braves last weekend, and then they just finished a series with the Pirates that they won and took one from the Cardinals last night. So it's been back and forth like the whole season, but yeah, we'll get into that and much more. So Elizabeth, how are you?
I'm doing well. We've had sort of a couple of weeks to recover from the whole trade deadline situation, and I don't know how if you feel this way. I've oddly been so much more calm and relaxed ever since they officially decided the season was over. In a weird way, I've actually enjoyed the games more than I did sort of earlier in the season when they still had a chance, because I've sort of been trying to approach it, you know, if I just sort of give up all investment in the rest of the season, no matter what happens come the offseason, I'm always sort of sad and wishing there were baseball. So I've been trying to like enjoy watching and like watching Gary Keith and Ron, or listening to Gary Keith and Ron, listening to Howie on the radio if it's an ESPN game, which I did last Sunday against the Braves. I don't know. Oddly, I feel like I've just been in kind of more of a zen state. Like, yes, they're probably not making the playoffs this season, but in a weird way, because I've basically fully accepted that, I've almost been trying to enjoy the rest of the season, knowing that it's probably going to end on whatever it is. October 1st is their last game. So I've still been watching. I've still been hoping they win, even though I do acknowledge that tanking for the top six pick is probably more productive in the long run. So I'm not really that devastated when they don't win. But I don't know. Why don't we start with that? Like, how have you kind of been approaching the rest of the season as a Mets fan in terms of your overall investment and like how you're watching the games? Because, you know, like I said, am I like living and dying with every pitch? No. But like, I'm still watching hoping Pete Alonso hits a home run. I'm still watching hoping there's some cool defensive plays, or like Senga pitch as well. Quintana pitched great again last night. So I don't know. It's hard to like turn that off even when you know they don't really have a high chance of actually doing well. And they did trade a lot of their better players. So yeah, how have you been kind of approaching this post-deadline version of the team?
Yeah, pretty similar to you. I mean, when they win, it's nice. I'm like, wow, cool. When they lose, I'm really not losing any sleep over it. I'm not invested in every pitch like I was most of the season. Like, if I have something else I can be doing, I'll keep tabs on the game, but I don't need to make it appointment viewing to watch the Mets anymore. You know, like you said, I've been a lot more calm. It's nice to see. I want to see Alvarez do well. Obviously Vientos went on the IL, Beatty's got sent down, but I want to see the young players do well that are getting a chance the rest of the year, which means I don't really want to see Abraham Almonte. I don't really want to see Rafael Ortega. I know Jonathan Araúz hit a couple home runs this week, so it's okay. But I'm excited to see what these young guys can do in the last couple months. But yeah, I mean, when they win, it's a nice little added bonus. And like you said, if they get top six pick, they won't be dropping down 10 slots in the draft because of the whole luxury tax situation. It's just been kind of watching to watch. Don't really have any strong feelings on it. Like last night with the Cardinals, I wasn't really getting super nervous when they were about to blow the game. I just was kind of...
They brought Trevor Gott in. I was like, oh,
yeah, and that's
well,
how you know
they clearly don't care that much.
And he's been a lot better over the last like maybe 10 outings, whatever. He's been pretty good. So we'll see. That trade might work out in the long run, but it's a lot different than earlier in the season, that's for sure. But a lot less stress, which is good. But yeah, it's been kind of just what it is, you know.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, you know, as Mets fans, this is kind of listen. Yes, they have Steve Cohen as their owner, but we've had so many years of them being bad. And they haven't really sold this aggressively at the deadline in a while, or really ever to this extent in that I can remember. But like in some ways, I don't know, I'm kind of used to this. This is not, we are hardened by years of not being in playoff position on August 18th. So yes, it's been disappointing this year, but at the same time, I guess I can wait another year or two or whatever it takes. This is not the end of the world. They're trying to improve their organization, and this was the result for the rest of the season, realistically, based on the options they had. It's like I'm having a hard time just totally not caring, but at the same time, I think my emotions at this point in the season are a lot, there's a lot less variety. When they win, I'm not as elated as I normally would be. Even when they like beat the Braves on Sunday, I wasn't normally, if they were like in, if that win actually meant something to their season, I would have been super happy. But I think I've just had a smaller range of emotions related to the Mets since August 1st. When they lose, I'm like, okay. When they win, I'm not even necessarily like jumping to watch all the highlights again or watching the post game necessarily, which I usually only do after they win anyway. So it's sort of just been a smaller range of emotions, just more in the kind of, yeah, watching as a casual, still invested observer, but not getting so amped when they win and like not really being that sad when they lose. It's interesting because I think like last season, you know, the only season in several years where they've been super competitive most of the year, like earlier in the season, I was kind of more relaxed because I was just kind of enjoying them being good. And then I started getting super stressed late into the season, or especially in like September when I was like, oh my God, Braves are catching up. Exactly. So I got kind of progressively more stressed as the season went on. This year, I feel like I started off way more like that, and then I've calmed down over the, I mean, I say this, but I'll still be watching the game and like yelling at the TV if there's a terrible strike three call, or like I'm still invested in the moment, but it doesn't linger as much.
Yeah,
after
for sure.
The games, yes, you know, exactly. Like I'm not watching, and if something terrible happens, just totally like not responding. But it's been sort of a flip from last year, where as the season went on, I was getting a little bit more like, I don't know. I remember my dad was telling me when we were watching the wild card series together, he was like, you were so on, especially this was game two. We were watching on TV with the one they actually won. And he was like, you were very on edge the entire time. And I was like, yeah, I know. And I even more so than usual. But this season, I feel like I've been kind of more chill. I still enjoy going to games, even when they're, it was interesting too. Like last point for the moment on this, I was at the game on Wednesday, which was the day game against the Pirates, which they won 8-3, I believe. And it was funny because like you wouldn't know being in the stands for that game. And I think partially because there were a lot of kids there. It was like camp day. It was a weekday 1 p.m. game. So there were a lot of like groups there with little kids. But the atmosphere was very happy being at the stadium. So I think people are still like having a good time.
Well, it's a lot more relaxing now, you know, like you don't.
Yeah, it was interesting. Like you would never have known what happened, or that fans were like very disappointed or very not happy with how the season has gone. Like the vibe in the stadium was very chill, but also like not just chill, actually like quite joyful, which was interesting. I sort of expected it to be just very, very kind of nonchalant, but
it's like, almost like surprising when they win now, you know, like people aren't really going to the park now expecting to win. I know I went, me and my dad were there for the dreadful doubleheader against the Braves, and we don't even have to get in.
I didn't watch a second.
You know how
that,
badly
luckily.
They got outscored, but like you go there and we had no expectations. Obviously against the Pirates, you're hoping they can do a little better than that, but you go there just hoping basically to have a good time at the ballpark. Like last year, like you said, the expectations were so high and we're invested with every pitch, and when they lose a game, we're going home like upset.
Looking at the standings,
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, like they lose now, we're just like, oh, well, that stinks. But by the time we get home, we're over it, you know. When the Mets lose like earlier in the year and it's a game I think they should have won, I'm in a bad mood after the fact. Like you said, now it's just in the moment, you're like, oh, damn, like that sucks. But after you're like, all right, well, in the grand scheme of things, it really doesn't mean much right now. So, yeah, it's obviously a completely different feeling and something I didn't expect going into the season. I know we've said that multiple times. I feel like it's almost, I don't want to say more fun going to the ballpark now that there's not these expectations, but it's just, you know what you're going there for. You're just going there for a day at the park. You know, you're not going there to invest yourself in every pitch. You might get up and walk around during the game. You might do some other things that necessarily maybe you wouldn't do if it was as high stakes. I mean, that's at least how I look at it, which obviously I would much rather have the opposite where we are in it and going for it. But it is what it is. We're at where we're at. But yeah, it's just definitely not what we were expecting, but you still got to make the most of it. You could still go to the game and have a good time. And I'm sure you had a beautiful day the other day, and obviously they win, and you're not, like I said, you're not really expecting them to win, or you don't know what they're going to do. So when they do have a game like that, it's a lot more surprising and maybe you have a better time, you know? So yeah, it's an odd feeling after last year. And last year, it feels like so long ago. And obviously the team's looks a lot different now than it did. I just hope it's this summer and this summer only. So we'll see what happens.
Well, I think people have been so, myself included, so kind of wistful about how great the Mets were most of last season. And I think that sort of speaks a lot to, like, you know, in our lifetimes, since, I guess, if you include 2000, so say including 2000, the Mets have made, or I guess they also made the playoffs in 99. So the Mets have made the playoffs since 1999, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times in 24 years, I guess 25 seasons. So, like, if we were only cared about the Mets when they were actually in position to make the playoffs, that's so few of the time. Like, this is so, think about the percentage of seasons in our respective lifetimes where the Mets have actually been really good. It's like 3 of those
years. How about seasons where we're at this point in the season, they still had a shot? Like, usually in our life, they're out of it by now. You know, like,
right.
It's not even like they're going deep into September. Obviously, those couple years where they collapsed. But for the most part, by the trade deadline or by the mid to end of August, you know what's happening. You know they're out of it. There's no hope. So, I mean, we're kind of immune to it at this point, you would think.
Right. And it's like, I've tried to kind of like boil it back to, you know, ultimately, I love going to games. I don't care what, I'm not going to stop going to games just because they're bad, to like send a message, which to this ownership doesn't need to happen anyway. But I know other fans to their own owners have said that, or in the past, Mets fans would say that to like the Wilpons wanting to make a statement. I still love going to the stadium. I have a great time. It's a fun day, even whether they win or lose. And I think the events of the last few weeks have sort of taken us out of that 2022 mindset of this team is winning this year and they must win because this is the window. I think because they've sort of fallen so far from that point and traded players that we thought could lead them to a playoff spot this year, it has sort of boiled it back to like, listen, I will follow the team no matter who's on it. Like, there's, I forget who said it. I think it was like Jerry Seinfeld or somebody was saying, you know, you ultimately, you do root for the name on the front of the jersey, not the back. And so no matter who's playing for the Mets, like, I'm still going to hope they win. I can't like root for them to lose. It's so hard. Like, you know what I mean? Even if it technically makes them more productive in the long run, I can't like root for them to lose. I also can't, like stop watching the games. I don't know. It's just a part of me. I know
it's
when
a sickness.
On.
That's what I've dialed it down to. It's a sickness.
I mean, sometimes they overlap with work for me. So I end up either having to watch it for work or it's on at the exact same time. And I would literally be getting all the updates from work anyway. But, you know, so I maybe don't make as much effort to watch the games when it doesn't overlap with me already being home and like watching baseball. But
isn't it nuts that they're out of it and like it still draws you in? Like, if you have nothing to do or you're whatever and you'll be like, all right, I want to watch the game, you know, and there's no expectation going into it. It's
interestingly relaxing in a way, which is weird. And I'm not like sitting there being so sad that they're bad. I'm not sitting there thinking about really what could have been at this point. I'm sort of just being like, yeah, maybe something cool happens.
For like a week I was, but at this point, I'm over it. You know?
Yeah, it's been a few weeks now. So
have you been keeping tabs on the players they traded, though? And have you been secretly rooting for them to not do well?
I mean, kind of. I don't know. I mean, Verlander, no, because I think he seems like a very, I really wish we had more of him, honestly, as a Met, because I really think he did want to embrace the New York market. And I think if he had been a Met for longer, I think he really would have become quite, and hopefully pitched pretty well for most of it. I think he would have become kind of even more of a Met than he was. He was only on the team for a few months.
Yeah, it felt like almost he wasn't even here. Like, it was just like a cameo, you know?
But especially the way he was very classy towards the organization.
I think that's the big thing, how you go out. Like, Scherzer has got so much ill will towards him now because of what he said and how he went out. I just feel like it's so much different than him and Verlander.
It is, but again, like, Scherzer has always been kind of more candid. I don't think Verlander's not really, I don't think ever throughout his career been as outspoken as Max Scherzer is. So it doesn't surprise me that they would have had different responses to this unexpected fire sale. I know it's impossible not to compare the two because of their history together and the fact that they were both on the Mets this year. They're both going to be first ballot Hall of Famers and all of that. But it doesn't really surprise me that like Justin Verlander would have basically taken the high road and not really said anything. I mean, I know there was that one comment he made about their analytics department not being as advanced as in Houston, but of course it isn't. I mean, Houston has won the ALCS. Like, Houston's been in ALCS like 6 years in a row. Of course,
besides Houston and the Dodgers, I don't really know anybody that's analytical department is.
Or like the Rays, probably.
Yeah, I guess the Rays. Maybe I'd put them in there too. But
I mean,
I'm just saying based on success, you know. Like, I mean, the Rays have had some success. They went to the World Series in 1 year, but the Dodgers and the Astros are like a factory, and the Braves are turning into that too. But yeah.
Yeah, I would say the players they traded, I haven't. Maybe Scherzer a little bit, just be like, because I don't know. I've sort of been like rooting.
He's the only one that I've been kind of like rooting against. Secretly happy this year when he doesn't do well.
I don't know why. I just like don't.
The rest
really
of them,
like
I don't care. Like, I hope Mark Canada does well. Tommy.
Yeah, I'm not really rooting against Mark Canada in Milwaukee. Who I want him to do well. You know what
although
I mean?
Although Robertson, he was great. Not that Robertson did anything bad, but it was like a week ago maybe, and he had 2 straight blown saves. I think it might have been against Philly, somebody, and I wouldn't say I was happy, but a little smirk came across my face. You know?
No, but. David Robertson was like so nice.
Oh, he was great, but I'm just saying so many people were killing the Mets for that trade. And I mean, that was just the start of the sell-off. So it was just a sign of things to come. I don't know. And it's the Marlins. If he was in the American League with some other team, I really wouldn't care. You know, like I wouldn't think that way. But I don't know.
I liked him a lot. I really am not.
I did too. And I hope they re-sign him. Like, I hope they can somehow.
He's still got it.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, I'm definitely over the trade deadline. It took me maybe like a week to let it settle in and come to grips with it, I guess is the best way to put it. But
it was kind of a shock. I mean, honestly, because every day it was like, oh, one day like Scherzer's gone, and the next day like Verlander's gone, and then I turn on the TV, I'm like, who's still here? It's like that meme of the guy like standing. Isn't it like John Travolta like standing alone in the room looking around? Isn't
that
from Pulp Fiction?
Or the there's Will Smith in Fresh
Prince. Yeah, there's two of those where the guys are looking around like, where'd everybody go?
So that's what I felt like. I think Verlander, you're right. Verlander definitely stung the most. But I mean, at this point, I'm excited to see these young guys that they got. I mean, obviously, the earliest a couple of them will be up. Maybe Gilbert and Acuna will be up at some point next year.
The rest hopefully.
Them will be 2025, 26. But I've been keeping some tabs on them in the minors, and I've been seeing some exciting stuff from them and love to go see them in person at some point. But yeah, I think future long term, in the moment, it sucked. But being able to kind of take a step back now and just evaluate it, I mean, you never know how these prospects are going to pan out, but the idea of it, I think, was the smartest thing for this organization because they had a bottom of the league farm system, and now they're pretty close to cracking the top 10 for what that's worth. They have a lot of talent in the young minors. I mean, it kills me to see Pete Crow Armstrong. He's tearing it up. He's like the 12th ranked prospect in baseball right now. And the fact that we got Javier Baez for a half season, and we all know how that went, and just to give up Crow Armstrong kind of sucks. But I like now that they're sticking to. Last year, it looks better that I know they could have had a chance to go all in, but they didn't trade any of their top prospects that could have been good. I know a lot of people were saying go after Soto and trade Alvarez. I mean, looking at that now, Soto's a beast, but you have a chance to sign him if you want after next season. And you see what Alvarez is. He's going to be a star for this team.
Alvarez has shown he's capable of being the starting catcher for this team.
He's a beast, and he's only going to get better. I mean, the questions were about his defense, and his defense has been really good, in my opinion. I feel like he's got a strong arm. And I know
he's very attentive during the games. He knows what's going on. Like, and he knows what's best for pitchers.
When Bickford was trying to get that save the other night and Alvarez realizes the pitch clock's going to run out and he sprints out to the mound, like he's into every pitch. And I mean, as a catcher, you have to be, but you've seen catchers have lapses and I'm sure sometimes it will happen to Alvarez down the road. But even earlier in the year, Scherzer and Verlander, the way they spoke of him as veterans and how into it he is and how good they think he can be. I mean, that's got to tell you something. But yeah, the power's been there with Alvarez. Even last night against St. Louis, he put up a really good at bat, and he's been doing that. He's not chasing so much out of the zone like he was when he first came up. He's putting together quality at bats, and obviously, you know, the power's there. So I think next year he'll be hitting for an even higher average. I know he's around like 230 right now, but I wouldn't be surprised next year he can hit like 260, 270, hit you 30 home runs. That's really valuable out of a catcher, especially when he's going to be 22 years old next season. So I think the sky's the limit for him. And especially with all the other young guys they have coming up, I think Beatty going down to the minors is going to be a good thing for him. Hopefully he can come up and pick up where he left off earlier in the season. Because remember when he first came up, he was hot in AAA and he was tearing it up in the majors and then kind of just fell off a cliff. But hopefully you think that's just a mental thing and his ability will play out. So I'm excited. Hopefully they call Mauricio in the next few days. They got it. I mean, what's the at this point?
Why? Like what are we waiting for?
I don't need to see Jonathan Araúz playing.
The service time deadline is today, I think, or tomorrow.
So I would be very surprised if Mauricio isn't up in the next week. What do they have to lose? I don't understand. Like, let him take his lumps here. At this point, it really doesn't matter. It's just about development. So hopefully they do that. But yeah, I'm excited about these young guys that they acquired in these trades. I think in the Verlander trade, they obviously got Drew Gilbert, but they got the other kid, Ryan Clifford, and he's got a chance to have 30 home run potential. I've just been watching some videos and stuff on him, and been very impressed with what I've seen, even just some interviews and how he carries himself. And I think he just got drafted out of high school like last year. So we're going to see, but it's very exciting what they did. I think long-term it's very smart and hopefully it pans out.
Absolutely. And two things I like of the prospects they got from the Scherzer and Verlander trades. One, the two, I believe Clifford and Gilbert are both outfielders, correct?
Yeah.
And I do think the organization is sort of lacking, at least in the upper levels, at like strong outfield prospects. I know they have Alex Ramirez, who I think is still in Brooklyn, will be in Binghamton soon. The fact that Drew Gilbert, well, he's in AA and outfielder and could potentially be up. I mean, long term, you look at the Mets outfield prospects and it's like they got Nimmo signed and
that's it.
So it would be great if they could get some people from the system to supplement him instead of having to sign free agent outfielders constantly. So that's one thing I'm glad, you know, would it have been nice for them to get some more pitching prospects? Absolutely. But teams like don't trade top pitching prospects that much. It really doesn't happen that much. I don't know how in the trades that they made, I don't know who else they would have gotten from those teams that would have been better.
They probably could have settled and got a lesser prospect that was a pitcher, but they decided to go for the higher end,
which smart.
They didn't go for need. They went for potential. And yeah, when they were looking at their deals, I think that's very smart.
Definitely. And another thing I like, especially with Acuna, who they got from the Rangers, is that they need more players with speed. Mm-hmm. You look at the players that they're bringing up, and like Alvarez is great. He's a catcher, so he's sort of off the hook. You know, Beatty, Vientos, whoever, Mauricio, like these guys aren't fast.
That's not the name of their game for sure.
But you look at players who are sort of being exciting in the majors today, and especially with the new rules, stolen bases are sort of back, and like young players who are and can steal like 20, 30 bases easily are super valuable. And you look at players like, I mean, I know he's sort of been hot and cold offensively, but like Ellie De La Cruz, Julio Rodriguez, who has another like 2020 season, basically.
Bobby Witt
Jr. Exactly. Like these players who can impact the game with their speed are even more important now than they were like 2-3 years ago, because it's easier to steal bases at the major league level. And so the fact they got Acuna, who I think had stolen like 42 bases in the minors so far this year. And
now he's up to like 50.
Right. And like that, they don't really have a player. They haven't brought up a player with that kind of game changing speed
Since Jose Reyes?
In years, honestly. And so that really excites me because
it's pretty much been 20 years since they've had a guy that they called up that is a base runner like Acuna.
Like that is an element that they really, I mean, they have some speed. I mean, Lindor is basically, with Marte out at the moment, Lindor is basically their only base stealing threat. But he's not going to steal like 40 bases in a season. You know what I mean? He's good he has 20 so far this year, which is great. But to have a young player with that kind of speed potential to steal like 40, 50 bases pretty easily, probably at the major league level, with the new rules making it easier, is exciting for me because I think that's an element that they really have severely lacked in recent top prospects. And if he hits, he has to get on base. It doesn't seem like he has tons of power, but like
he's probably at this point, it looks like he'd max out maybe like 15, maybe 20 home runs in a year,
But again, if you have other prospects who, I don't know, I just think that speed element is like super exciting to me because I see that as becoming increasingly important. And just having players who are athletic, you know, I feel like a lot of the guys they brought up, again, they've hit well in the minors, but they're not great defensively and they're not that fast and they just don't have all the tools. And to have someone, not that Acuna is going to be, again, like a 30 home run a year person, which it doesn't seem like he will be, but I don't know. Like, that's just something where I look at his stat line and I was like, the Mets really need this. Yeah. They need someone who can actually be a everyday position player who is super fast and hits well enough to actually be.
But you look at Nimmo. I love Nimmo and he's great at getting on base, even though this year he hasn't gotten on base nearly at the clip he has through his career. But like, he gets on base, but he doesn't steal. That's not his game. But you look at these other teams, their leadoff guy gets on base, bam, he's on second base. You know, like look at Acuna all the time. And I know it's hard to compare him to his brother, but I mean, he's the top of the class.
They are related. I mean,
I know, but it's unbelievable. But a lot of teams have these guys that you get on and before you know it, they're stealing second. Some of them are even stealing third, you know, so it'd be nice for the Mets to have that guy. Maybe you could have Acuna when he comes up bat leadoff, putting Nimmo in the two hole. It can just, it changes so many things for your lineup, and you can do so many different things that, like you said, this, I know Marte's stolen a lot of bases this year, but Marte's obviously been a shell of himself, and hopefully that's just due to his health, and next year he comes back strong. But yeah, they, you're right, they're sorely lacking that. I mean, obviously you would hope they could have some more power in their lineup, but hopefully they can address that through free agency. Some of these prospects they got, like I said, I know it'll be a couple of years, but Clifford looks like he could have a lot of pop. But yeah, they desperately need speed. And that, like you said, these young guys they've called up already, that's not their game. So to have a guy like Acuna in your system and that can come up and do that for you. Another guy, Jet Williams, but he's a few years away, but I'm excited about him. Things I've seen from him, he gets on base at a really high clip. He steals bases. He said that the other day. I saw an interview. He said, get a single, steal second base. Like, that's my game, gap to gap. So you like to
that's what they really need.
They need that spark plug in the lineup, that guy that's going to just get in the heads of the other team and really take off on the bases. And like you said, when was Jose Reyes is probably the last prospect that the Mets brought up that really had that game-changing speed and stolen base ability. And that was in 2003, so 20 years ago.
They haven't really developed a player with that profile in years, exactly. Nope.
Exciting. So hopefully, I think he can be up. Acuna could be up next year. I mean, we'll see how he progresses in Double A and then through to Triple A. And but him and Gilbert, I wouldn't be surprised if by midseason next year they're both on the team.
Gilbert, that would be great. Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, that was the most, the best thing I took from these trades is like they're sort of the prospects they got. I think are so promising that it really makes me miss Scherzer and Verlander less because. Yes, the Mets are very position player heavy in their system right now. But again, if you can develop most of a lineup, that helps so much just for your overall payroll flexibility and just in general, you know. So yes, they need to develop more pitchers. They need to develop not even just starters, but like more actual good relievers, which I know they've been trying out a lot of these guys this year. We'll see how many of them stick around through next spring training in terms of their ability to make a team that at least on paper should be trying to compete in 2024, even regardless of what they said this year. I think they're not going to be just not trying to field a competitive team next year. I mean, they know
with how embarrassing it's been a little bit, Steve Cohen's going to be wanting to put a competitive team on.
I mean, he might not break the bank for Otani. That'll be very interesting to see how those sweepstakes go in the offseason. They'll try. And you know, even if he didn't become a Met, he doesn't become a Met, but like, I don't think the Mets aren't going to like give up on next year, regardless of, there's no way they're going to sign.
Have you looked at the free agent class though? Like, is there anybody in particular you would want?
It's hard to say. I mean, I know it's mostly like pitcher.
And that's what they need. That's what they need, pitchers.
It's funny because a lot of the guys who are free agents, I just personally hate watching pitch. Like Blake Snell, I just find his starts such a slog. Like
he doesn't go past the fifth inning, you know. Like the
I would not want to sign him. Like I just don't enjoy watching him pitch at all. And I think
he's at his peak right now, and that's great for five innings. But after that, you know, it's not so good.
Right. I mean, Urias. Like I don't
see get him on a cheap deal. Like
I don't know.
I wouldn't mind them signing Urias because he wasn't good this year. If they could sign him to a 1-year prove it deal, I wouldn't. What's the risk in that?
Like, yeah, I don't think he's signing a 1-year deal though.
I don't either. But you never know. Like a couple years ago, Carlos Rodon, he had a couple good years, but then his year going into his walk year, it wasn't that good. He couldn't stay healthy, and he just wasn't great. And he got like a 2 or 3 year deal with an opt out after year one. Maybe Urias goes after something like that, you know, with a high AAV. But we'll see. I know Yamamoto. Everyone keeps talking about the Mets might go after him. The Japanese guy's only 25. He's won the award that's equivalent to the Cy Young in Japan. He's won it the last 2 years, and he won an MVP there 1 year. So
I mean, that he would be way more
fits into their window, you know,
any of the free agent pitchers like Nola. Yeah. I mean, Aaron Nola, he eats innings again. I just like don't really, again, maybe I'm just being overly picky. It's hard because a lot of these guys have been on like rival teams for years.
Definitely be better than what we've put out there this year.
Oh, for sure. And like Giolito is going to be a free agent too. And again, everyone always talks about Giolito. Him like he's an ace. I don't know.
He was an ace 2 years ago. Since then, he wasn't really.
I don't think he's
been. He's like an 8-something ERA since he got traded to the Angels.
To me, I would be very wary of giving him a big contract.
I said, if you're giving one of these guys a 1-year prove it deal, I'm cool with it. Like, that's fine. But I'm not signing most of these. Maybe Nola, I would give a few years to. But other than that, I'm not really interested. Besides Yamamoto, which I think they should go all in. This guy
that would be great. I would much rather him than more advanced than
Senga was coming over here. And look how good Senga's been a blessing for this team. But if you put Yamamoto with Senga and And Quintana, who's been awesome. Like, Quintana's been great. Imagine we had him all year. He wasn't
I
hurt.
Know. I didn't expect to be things. Thinking this. I was like, was he the key the whole time? Like,
if you can push him to being your number three, number four starter, I mean, that changes a lot. And then maybe even then you can give a guy maybe like David Peterson a shot in the rotation, or you sign somebody to a prove it deal. Because they're not going to have a choice. They're going to have to sign at least at a bare minimum two starters this offseason. They have to. There's no way.
And we'll see if somebody like Mike Vassell, who I think is now in AAA.
Yeah, but why not call him up in September? Let him pitch for a month.
Right. That's what I'm saying. I don't know if he's going to get a shot this year, but like, depending on how spring training goes next year, other teams do this. Like, people compete for the fifth starter spot. Why, if he has like a great spring training next year, why shouldn't he get a shot out of spring training? And, you know, we'll see. There's a lot of options. But, and, you know, again, it's not going to be as like flashy as this offseason was, but we've seen a flashy offseason really means nothing. Verlander was injured for the first month of the season anyway. So, you know, who...
And Quintana was out until July.
Right, exactly. And those were two of their big signings. Diaz, they re-signed. He was injured the whole year. So it's great when they, like, sign exciting players. But I think, ultimately, like Steve Cohen said, he wants to build a great team from within. And
he said hope isn't a strategy. I love that he said that hope is not a strategy.
And I think that's why they did what they did this year, because they realized... praying that they turn it around and show a completely different side of the team than they have all year is not really that.
No, it would have been borderline insanity. You've seen how many games already with what they've done. It's just, it wasn't
the bullpen they have is not strong enough to compete in the playoffs.
You got to give them credit, because not every team would have just realized what they were doing was wrong and tore it down. And they did. And I think they're going to be much better for it. Like, in the long run, I mean, everyone's hating on them now and stuff, and fine. Bring it on. But let's
we
give
can,
it.
We can take and, this, but yeah, you know what I mean?
It's our like, whole lives, so
this is not.
It's fine. All the jokes, whatever. Listen to WFAN, listen to everything, which I love, but it's Mets. Oh, the highest payroll ever. And it's true. Like, I mean, you can't run from it. It's all true. But let's give it a couple years, because maybe they'll look back and this will be the best thing that could have happened to them. So, and you know, Cohen's going to, he's going to bring in reinforcements into this team. He said he wants to be competitive, and I don't see why they wouldn't. They sent out that letter to fans, and which I appreciated. Pretty much he promised that they're going to put a competitive field on a competitive team on the field next year. So obviously the expectations aren't going to be as lofty as this season or last season, like Billy Epler said, but all signs point to them hiring David Stearns as their next president of baseball operations, who seems like a really smart guy. He built a really good team and farm system with the Brewers. So I don't know. I don't see why they wouldn't be still aiming to make the playoffs next season.
Their future is still so bright. It's so much brighter now than it ever was before, like, Steve Cohen bought the team. Because at the end of the day, regardless of how they perform on the field, regardless of the transactions that they make, you know he cares about building a winning organization. Yep. And that common thread is honestly enough to sort of keep me going. Regardless of how they do, it's like, you know he wants the Mets to be good for a long time. However it takes to get there. You couldn't say that with the previous ownership.
No,
really.
If the Wilpons were here, it would be such a different feeling right now.
But you know he cares.
This for years. Yeah. Yep.
Or at least, I mean, cares. Yes, he's like a businessman. And in addition
he's
going to
put his best
fan,
foot forward. It may not always work. Like, look at this season. It didn't work. But he's going to try. He's going to listen to his baseball ops team. He's going to shell out the money that they suggest him to shell out. He's going to try his best. And that's all you can really ask for out of an owner, that he cares. And he's going to be willing to cut some checks to make the team as good as possible.
Right. And so even though most of the season has been fairly unenjoyable to watch, I feel like fans of rival teams on Twitter, which I don't like, I never like post in response to any of these things, but sometimes I lurk and like see what people are saying. And I think they all want to claim that their series against the Mets this year was like rock bottom for the team. And I'm like, come on, this is the Mets in the Cohen era. Nothing in the last few years is rock bottom since they've changed ownership.
Yeah, I agree.
This
you
is
could
not
say it's, maybe it's rock bottom of
hopeless.
Cohen ownership, but not just as a Mets fan over the last 20 years. You know?
Right, exactly. I'm like, I feel way more optimistic about the team, regardless of what has happened, than I ever did for like most of my childhood. So
yeah,
we can't be broken that easily. Okay, like I said, we've had like what, six good seasons in our entire lives. So mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure we can stick this out.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Although other fan bases who are, I won't name names, but not doing so great for maybe the first time in their entire lives.
The Yankees.
I don't feel as bad for. So.
Oh, my
maybe
God.
Not,
they're a mess. Can we talk about them a little bit? Because
I don't want to gloat because I genuinely
it's not even gloating because we're worse than them, but at least we can see into the future kind of and see that there might be a light at the end of the tunnel. I mean, with the Yankees, unless they're going to just spend a ton of money to fix all their holes, I don't know why they didn't sell at the deadline. Like you said, it really wasn't working. Like the Mets noticed it wasn't working, and obviously the Mets had
the chemistry wasn't working either.
But the Yankees could have done so many things. They could have traded Gleyber Torres. Like there were plenty of, at least a few pieces they could have sold off and got something for that are in their walk year, just that they weren't going anywhere with this season. So I don't understand why they were going to buy and like do something to advance their team, or they were going to sell. And they did one thing. They got Middleton, the reliever from the White Sox. Like they really didn't do anything, which I know several Yankee fans that I'm friends with are so frustrated by that they pretty much just didn't do anything, I don't know. Glad it's not our problem, but it doesn't really make any sense to me.
Yeah, that definitely was. The Mets did, some would say, too much, but at least they acted. Yeah,
at least they chose a side, you know? Like,
right. It is interesting to see. I mean, look, have I been sort of enjoying the downfall so far of the Yankees this year?
No,
absolutely.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
It is just objectively from a baseball fan perspective, it is interesting. And because, you know, you were in New Jersey, but like, we're both basically in the New York media market. So we see coverage of the Yankees a lot on like various things. And so I sort of know what's going on in their team and am vaguely invested in it purely from I received this information through osmosis kind of way. And it is interesting to me to kind of, yeah, wonder about the pieces they have and sort of what they're, I mean, they have some like decent prospects. I think they have.
Why aren't they calling them up too? Like that's like, they have the kid Austin Wells. I think there was a rumor that they didn't play last night in AAA, and him and the other outfielder might get called up tonight, which would be good for the Yankees and good for their fans, you know, bring some life to this team. Cause they just look dead. Like you watch these Yankee games and they look lifeless. They look how the Mets looked a month ago. They have no spirit to them. No life. It's just, the guy with the most spirit is Boone going out. I love watching Boone go out there and get tossed. I don't know.
Oh my God. That ejection he had
last
the other week.
That was hilarious.
I feel like
as a Yankee fan, Yankee fans hate on Boone. I mean, it's really not as much. I know Boone will give some lame excuses after games, but I would be more pissed at Cashman. Like just
that's the sense that I've gotten.
Yeah. But some Yankee fans are like, get rid of Boone. But if Cashman stays and they get rid of Boone, they're just going to bring in another guy that's analytical or whatever. It's really not going to be much of a change. The only way this organization is going to really change is if they get rid of Cashman, and we know that's not happening.
What is interesting, the level of job security or the length of time that he's been there is very like singular.
What has he accomplished since 2009? He's made the ALCS a couple times, but other than that, like last season, I don't know if you heard, but on the Michael Kay show, they had this whole debate the other day, and Michael's point was, they made the Final Four, but other people were saying, well, yeah, but they got embarrassed by their rival. They got swept. They barely made it past the Guardians. They were down 2-1 to them. And then they get swept, or whatever it was. And then they get swept by the Astros. Like it wasn't even a fair fight. So to say they made the ALCS, sure, but without context, like, I don't know. I don't know why Cashman, because of the late 90s, early 2000s, like, I guess that's why he's holding on to his job.
It's sort of just bizarre to see him having been there that long.
It's the longest leash of all time. Because
when other teams have parted ways. I mean, Astros fired their GM after they won the World Series.
Yeah, I'm
not rooting for them, obviously, but like it or not, I'm in New York. And so like I feel somewhat absorbing Yankees-related content, unfortunately, whether I like it or not. So
odd because usually this time the Mets are out of it and the Yankees are right in the thick of it, but it's kind of...
The Yankees are half a game better in the wild card standings than the Mets are right now.
And they're under 500 now too, the Yankees. So
it's interesting because the Mets like traded half their players and they're only half a game worse in the playoff standings. And granted, the AL is way more competitive overall in terms of like teams' records. Yeah, that's the thing. Like the Mets are only what, 7 games out right now? I mean, for all that's happened, they haven't really made up any ground. But they also haven't really lost any ground.
But if you think about it, like I said, I think they made the right move trading everybody. Yes. But what if they hadn't? And what if they had kept the team together? Where would they be right now? I mean, it might have just continued down the road it was going, and that's probably what would have happened. But you look at some of these teams that are ahead of them, the Marlins, the Phillies, like some of them, the Diamondbacks.
The Reds have fallen off.
The only team that's really been,
the D-backs have really.
The Cubs are the only team that's really, since the trade deadline, been.
The Giants have done well.
They've been okay, but they haven't.
Looking at some of these other teams' records, I think the Mets could have passed the Padres by now. I don't know if they'd be over 500. Still,
and a lot of people are saying the Padres are more of a disappointment than the Mets. And I mean, I don't know if I completely
I don't know
agree
if it's like a disappointment off. They're both disappointing. It's
very,
like
very. But maybe now the Padres are in the light more because they didn't trade people. So they could have capitalized big time. Like if they went all in, and I know it's hard to stomach for Padres fans probably, but if they had traded Soto, Josh Hader's in his walk year, if they had traded Josh Hader. But I mean, I guess this offseason they're gonna try to extend Soto. I hope that doesn't happen because I want the Mets to have a shot at him. But I don't know. I mean, Soto would fall right into the Mets window, no? If they're saying they want to be really competitive in 25, I mean, after next year, if that's their big splash of the offseason, Blade Tidwell's at AA. If by 2025 he's up, Vassell, like you said, if they sign a guy like Yamamoto, if they're pretty set on the pitching side going into 2025, I mean, I don't see why after next year, if Soto isn't extended, why they don't make a huge run at him.
Yeah, depending on how, if their other, whatever their other outfield prospects are. How
yeah, but I mean, yeah. Juan Soto is only going to be what? 26.
You can't expect any of the prospects to have the bat that he has. So that would be unrealistic.
It's not bad to have a plethora of players that have value. So
no, it is interesting looking at the standings. I don't know where the Mets were on July 31st.
They're like six. I think they were like 6.5 out.
Yeah, and they're only 7 out. They've barely lost any ground, and they have Tyler McGill starting every fifth day.
And Jonathan Araújo's playing second.
It's funny though, because I think I've seen McGill's only good starts of the season. I've been to 6 Mets games this year. Tyler McGill has started 3 of them, and in every single one, he's gotten the win, which I find hilarious because he's been so bad every other start.
Good luck charm.
Maybe because I went to the one game against the Padres in like April that he started. He pitched like 6 innings, 2 runs allowed.
That was a day game too, wasn't it?
Yeah. I went to the game against the Rays that he started, also a day game. He pitched like 6 innings, allowed 2, or 5 or 6 innings, allowed 2 runs, got the win. The other day, he went, I think, 5 and allowed, I think, 2 runs and got the win. I think he's only 3 good starts of the year, somehow, I've been to. Hey, listen, I can't explain it. It's definitely a coincidence, but yeah, it's, well, I know we were talking a little bit about this before recording, but another team that's also 7 games out of the wild card, even though they were really trying not to be, is the Angels, which we sort of alluded to earlier. And unlike the Mets, they actually tried to add major league players to their team at the deadline. They traded for CJ Cron. They traded for Randall Grichuk. They acquired Lucas Giolito. And last and probably least, they acquired Mets reliever Dominic Leone.
I was going to say, give out stud Dominic Leone.
I can't believe the Mets got an actual prospect for him.
And a good one, too. He's been hitting good at Double-A.
Shocking to me. Like, honestly, in terms of the value based on the player they gave up, best trade of the entire deadline.
Yeah,
I can't
believe.
There's
something going on behind the scenes that they're – not that this prospect is amazing. Jeremiah Jackson, I believe his name is, but – I don't.
How did they get a prospect from this random, not very good?
How did the Mets not just get like cash for
that? That's what I'm saying. I couldn't believe when I saw
like
that
a vending
trade,
machine.
The
like
Mets
that.
Traded Dominic Leone for like the Angels at the time number 9 ranked prospect. I was like, how?
And we hated Dominic Leone.
Is
like,
that possible? This
and
is the
been
best
just
trade
as bad,
ever.
If not worse, with the Angels. So like, imagine if the Mets made a move like that. That is a Mets type of move in the past few years where you're getting this guy and you – like, the Mets got Joey Lucchesi a couple years ago in a 3-team trade, and they traded Andy Rodriguez, I believe his name is. Mm-hmm. And he's, like, a top 50 prospect now in MLB.
With the Pirates, he's, like, catches and plays
right
field.
Yeah, he's up with the major
league
team. So I'm just saying, like, that's the type of Mets trade. Not that this guy is going to turn out to be that, but anything of value for Dominic Leone is crazy. Like, when they did that, I was shocked. I was like, is this real? Like,
they got a prospect. They didn't even.
I know
get...
Epler came from the Angels, so he's familiar with that system. But
he was like a DFA candidate. He's a guy they would have like designated
bad.
For assignment.
He was really bad.
I couldn't honestly.
When
again,
he came in the game, I closed my eyes or turned the TV off. It was that bad. So the fact that he got a kid with some pop at AA, I mean, that's not a bad deal.
I know if this guy that they got for him does anything significant at the major league level, it's a huge win in my book.
Yep.
Unless Leone like somehow closes out game 7 of the World Series, which is going to happen. So
the Angels are 8 games back.
Yeah. Somehow.
I mean,
they're
just pushing Ohtani further and further out the door the way they're playing.
Well,
he's a weird guy. Maybe he wants to stay.
That's the thing. I don't think it's such an automatic, like him leaving as everyone says. I don't know. Maybe because like Trout signed there for 12 years. So maybe he's going to convince him to stay. That's the only thing I'm wondering. It's like,
Leaving LA, whether it's the Angels or the Dodgers. I really think he's going to the Dodgers, but I don't see him leaving LA.
I mean, that's what everyone said. That definitely makes sense. I don't know. I haven't like read every single article about like where it's sort of pointless.
And I feel like people don't know him well enough. Like he's such a mysterious figure. I mean,
we don't know what he speak the language. Or maybe, he hasn't said. Yeah.
So he's been very closed door on that. And I don't know. I'm sticking to it that I think Steve Cohen is going to give him the biggest offer money wise, but I think it's a 20% chance he comes here.
I think it's low.
But I think the Mets will give him the highest offer for sure. And maybe Epler has something to do with it. Maybe Epler's got a good enough relationship with him and his agent that he can lure him here, which would be great. If Epler is the reason that Ohtani comes here, you can keep Epler for as long as you want, especially if they're going to have Stearns ahead of him. And we'll see with how these prospects turn out. That'll be a big thing on Epler, how these trades all work out. But yeah, if Ohtani comes here, I would be very surprised. But yeah,
I would too. It almost seems like too good to be true. I know people have been talking about it, blah, 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 but
he's the best player of this generation. Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, with Cohen's money, why wouldn't he give him a huge offer? You know,
and I think it is going to be very interesting. Like I said, I don't think him leaving the Angels is as slam dunk as everyone says, sort of for the reasons you mentioned. I think if they somehow
to have some intel that he might stay. Otherwise, why wouldn't they have broached like trading him? Like, why wouldn't that have come close?
That's what I'm wondering too.
They have to have some inclination that there's a chance of him staying there.
Exactly. If he was like, you know, 100%, you know, thank you for signing me. I am planning to sign elsewhere in the offseason. If he had said that, why wouldn't they have traded him?
But it is Artie Moreno, so who knows what goes through that man's head.
Right. Well, Artie Moreno also famously was going to sell the team and then like decided not to sell the team.
He's just weird.
He's sort of a wild card owner among owners, but we'll see. I don't know if the Angels can climb back into it. They're half a game behind the Yankees right now. The Angels are coming to Citi Field next weekend, so that should be fun. I'm sure Ohtani will be getting lots of cheers. It is so cool to me, though, how like he's the only player where this would happen, where he would get cheered by opposing teams because he so transcends like the team that he's on. Yeah. It's going to be cool to see. I bet there's going to be a lot of like sign people.
Especially because he's never played at Citi Field, so there's going to be so much buzz there.
There's going to be lots of people with signs there, I guarantee. If whatever broadcast these games are on, I'm not sure if they're all on SNY or what the deal is. I think one of them's on Peacock, actually, the Sunday game.
Great.
Sorry. But I'm sure there's going to be fans like, I bet all the three of those games are going to be super crowded and packed.
They should. If Mets fans want a shot at getting this guy, they should show them all the love they can. It won't hurt.
It is funny seeing like the kind of wave of opposing fans trying to woo him in like different stadiums. Yeah. Like in Seattle at the All-Star game, they were cheering for him. And then in Texas, I think, what was it, like last week when the Angels were there, there were like all these chants breaking out about like trying to recruit him.
They were cheering for him.
So it's funny how this has happened.
I mean, it reminds me of like, I guess it was a little more than 10 years ago, but when LeBron, before he went to the Heat, he would go he would come to Madison Square Garden and the Knicks fans would give him a standing ovation or wherever he'd go, where there was a chance of him maybe going, they would show him all the love possible, you know? It kind of reminds me of that, where they're just trying to do everything. And you can't blame the fans.
They better be on their best behavior. Yeah.
They should be. Yeah. No throwing stuff. No booing. Don't even boo Vogelbach. All right. Let's not boo any of our own players. Don't show him that side.
Exactly.
Why is Vogelbach still on the team? I know we're almost done, but can we talk about this real quick? What is he doing?
I don't know.
Get rid of him.
He's making not enough to still
call Mauricio. If you don't want to put him in the field yet, let Mauricio DH sometimes.
I don't get it.
When Vientos is healthy, let him DH. It's dumb. Get rid of him. He doesn't bring any value. He's got 9 home runs. He's supposed to be hitting 20, 25 home runs. He can't run the bases. He never plays the field. He hasn't played the field one inning since he got traded here. And rightfully so, because he just can't move. Like, I'm sure he's a nice guy, but come on, enough's enough. This is a joke.
I know.
What are we doing? Just get rid of the guy.
I mean, I thought in spring training, he shouldn't have been on the team this year. Because I remember I was like, why is nobody talking about this? Why is he here? There's no one else who could replace this level of production. I think not. I think someone could replace this level of
production. Hitting .220 with like a .330 on base with 9 home runs.
And he's played most of the year.
They could have signed freaking Daniel Murphy.
Daniel Murphy could have put up these numbers. I'm fairly confident.
I'm just saying, like, not that they should have done that, but there's so many options that
it's bizarre. It is bizarre, the leash that he had.
What is the tie that they have to Daniel Vogelbach? Besides the fact that they traded Colin Holderman for him, who's got a 3-something ERA, and 4 more years of control.
And who was very promising at the day. It's not like Holder
throwing 100 miles an hour on the black the other day to strike out Alonso.
That's a reliever they could have used.
Asinine trade. At the time, it was an asinine trade, and it looks 10 times worse now. Stupid. Absolutely stupid.
Yeah.
How much more valuable would a guy like Holderman have been in the back of that bullpen this year than Vogelbach?
Well, pretty valuable. I mean, again, it's like Vogelbach, he hasn't done enough to warrant the level of playing time that he's gotten. Like, anyone else practically...
And if they want
the DH spot
like
that,
that
many games,
you don't need to trade for Vogelbach last year. You keep Holderman. If you go into the offseason, you still think you need that left-handed DH, you sign somebody like a Carlos Santana that would have given you much more production than that, and you could have got him for a very similar price.
And Santana actually, like,
he's good. He got traded again because he's been good.
Yeah, exactly. He gets traded like every year because teams want him. He's on the Royals for a while. He was on the Guardians. Like, hey, he's been a bunch of teams.
He's an average major league hitter, which Vogelbach hasn't been and probably never will be. I can't believe they traded. Almost like we're saying, how did we get anything of value for Leon? Pirates fans got to be like, how did we get this for Vogelbach?
Well, I don't even think he was that bad with the Pirates, too.
He was okay, but even at the time, we were all saying, "What? We're trading Holderman for this guy?"
I know, because Holderman was great the first half of last year. I know. It's bizarre. It doesn't make sense why he's had it. Not that, I mean, the fact that they traded for him, okay, maybe they were hoping he would provide like a lot of power, but he can't. He's not that good of a hitter. And I'm flabbergasted by the leash that he's gotten.
It's a great
in
word.
That spot. Yep. So, I mean, at this point, I feel like he's probably going to end the year with a team at this point because they've had him for this long.
Stupid. They got a young guy in AAA, Carlos Cortez. He's hitting bombs. He's hitting well. He's a left-hand hitter. Bring him up. Let him DH. There's so many different options.
Yeah, or if Mauricio does come up, I really hope that, like,
yeah, let him DH sometimes. Like, obviously, they want to work him out in the field and let him get his lumps out there, which I understand. But some days you're going to want to DH him. So give him Vogelbach spot. Like, it's so dumb.
We'll see. I look forward to not having to watch him anymore because it just isn't enjoyable.
You might keep him again.
What is his contract situation? Does he
I think it's up after this year. Maybe he's got 1 year left arbitration, but I think he's done.
I hope not.
But you never know. They might sign him to a lifetime deal.
I gotta look this up. Him.
I think this year, he was making $1.5 million.
Yeah. That's what's so bizarre. It's like,
what? Why? You're paying Robinson Cano $24 million this year to sit on his couch. I think Cano could have done a better job than Vogelbach. Like, it's actually insane.
I don't know.
It's insane.
Well, hopefully they cut bait because clearly, like, they can't have somebody taking up a roster spot that does half of a player. And he does less than a DH would do. So it is sort of frustrating that we still have to watch him, like, basically every day somehow. And sometimes walks, but that's basically it. And, like, he hits a home. But, again, it's like he hits the occasional home run. But name one big hit that he's actually gotten for the Mets that was relevant to a game outcome.
I think when we were losing, like, 21-0 last week, he hit a home run.
Yeah, I mean, congratulations. He got their only 3 runs in the doubleheader.
Go Daniel.
There's no clutch gene there that these home runs are providing tons of value. They're not really coming at meaningful times.
The most value he's bringing to us as fans is getting to watch him run around the bases on the rare occasion that he gets on base.
I know, but it's like, it's not really.
Isn't that sad?
A little bit. Oh, well. Well, we'll see. I really hope he's not on the team next year because they can replace him so easily with anyone else. And it would be better overall for the team because they would at least have somebody who could play the field in a pinch or run somewhat competently. So that would be nice. And again, we were just talking about speed earlier. He's the opposite of that. So hopefully we'll see what happens. I was surprised he was on the team this year. I'd still be surprised if he's on the team next year, but I don't know how you can look at his full season and be like, yes, he is our lefty DH next year. Like, how can you, even if the Mets aren't going all in next season, I don't know how in good conscience they could not move on. So we'll see. Anything else to add on the state of the Mets this year, the state of the Mets next year, the state of anyone else before we wrap up?
I think I got it all out.
Okay. I'm glad you got in that last job.
Thank you. That was very therapeutic. Very therapeutic. Sure. Thank you.
I could tell you're like waiting to say something. You're like, can I just say this before we sign off?
Yes.
Like, I needed
to get into it.
I'm right there with you. So thank you for being nice, but I think it's respectfully, it's time to move on. So we'll see what happens. Great. Well, thank you all so much for listening once again. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Cohen's Corner Pod. You can also follow me at NYMFan97, and you can follow Jake at Giblin_Jake, where we will be tweeting occasionally about the Mets not being living and dying with every pitch, but I will still be happy when Pete Alonso hits a home run or when Brandon Nimmo makes a diving catch, because that's just the kind of person I am. So thanks all so much for listening. And as always, let's go Mets.